From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, Governor Cuomo says SUNY Polytechnic Institute bears most of the responsibility for an alleged corruption scandal involving Cuomo's former top aides. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on the governor's claim, and Congressman Maloney announces legislation to prevent the establishment of new anchorage sites in the Hudson River Valley. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Governor Andrew Cuomo says much of the responsibility for the alleged corruption scandal touching his administration is on the state university, specifically SUNY Polytechnic Institute, which oversaw many of the contracts. But as the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports, reform groups say the governor is not telling the whole story.
Cuomo's made a few public appearances since the U.S. attorney, Preet Bharara, issued criminal complaints against 9 people, including several close to Cuomo and 2 major upstate real estate developers. When asked about the blame for the alleged wrongdoing, Cuomo places much of it on the state university system.
I appoint people to the state university board, but it's not in my office, quote unquote.
Cuomo says the process used for awarding contracts to private developers, which is now the focus of federal bid rigging charges, was created before he was governor.
That was the system that was in place, and apparently it had worked fine for 15 years.
John Caney with the coalition Reinvent Albany says it's true that the not-for-profit entities Fort Schuyler Management and Fuller Road Management that handle the contracts were not formed by Cuomo, but were created under former Governor George Pataki. They began in the 1990s to help build the Albany Nanotech Center. But Caney says their activities were ramped up under Cuomo and expanded to include projects like the $1 billion economic development plan for Buffalo, known as the Buffalo Bill, and millions of dollars of other high-tech projects across upstate New York.
Those tax dollars were proposed in the governor's budget by the governor. So at best, the governor was proposing spending billions of dollars to out-of-control state-controlled nonprofits and was not keeping an eye on where those billions of dollars were going. And at worst, his administration had a part in this giant bid rigging scandal.
The governor was not named in the criminal complaints. Cuomo has also decried the lack of oversight of the SUNY Poly contracts by the state controller, among others. And he said he's turning all of the contracts over to his own Empire State Development Authority, which routinely approves economic development projects where more checks and balances are required.
We do thousands of projects that are then audited. We have a state controller who goes through them. We have a New York State Attorney General who approves every contract.
But there's a key part that Cuomo is leaving out, says Reinvent Albany's Caney. The reason why the state controller did not review the Buffalo Billion and other contracts awarded by SUNY Polytechnic's not-for-profit entities is that Cuomo himself cut the controller out.
The governor stripped the comptroller of the power to stop these bid-rigged contracts. In his very first budget as governor, he did it. And that, when we look back now, can see was a huge problem.
The legislature went along with the change. Cuomo has had a rocky relationship with the state's controller, Tom DiNapoli, at times viewing him as a political rival. The governor says he'll offer some proposals to revamp the state's procurement process in his State of the State message in January.
We're going to have, for the State of the State, a reform package in terms of procurement with more checks and balances.
Caney and his reform coalition says the governor needs to do more than that, though. He says Cuomo needs to get input from other statewide elected officials, as well as the legislature, first.
We're asking the governor to work with the comptroller and attorney general and legislative leaders, not just propose something created in a black box that no one gets to see.
Reinvent Albany recommends that one state agency be responsible for all contract decisions and that it be totally transparent, instead of what Caney calls the present shadow government that's been caught up in the federal bid rigging scandal. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, as we just heard from our Karen DeWitt, Governor Cuomo says much of the responsibility for the alleged corruption scandal touching his administration over its economic development project is on the state university, specifically SUNY Polytechnic Institute, which oversaw many of the contracts.
Well, look, this really does strain credibility. First of all, the governor, he may say it's a separate agency, but he appoints the chairman, he appoints the board members of the SUNY board. He has immense influence on who's going to be the chancellor. He has all of that. To now come around and say it was them, especially when your best two buddies, Todd Howe, who has been with you through thick and thin, and Joe Percoco are targets. Howe has already confessed that he was in it up to his neck and is a cooperating witness. This doesn't fly. It just really, as I have said so many times before, strains credibility that here is this guy, Cuomo, who is saying, my best friends were involved in it, but it's a different agency, and so therefore, my hands are clean here. Please. Not only that, but who is at the center of this? Also, the U.S. attorney, Preet Bharara, and the state attorney general are going after none other than Elaine Calieros on a charge of bid rigging. Now, this guy was untouchable through many gubernatorial administrations, but is a real favorite of Cuomo, who kept giving him more and more responsibilities. And he's a SUNY employee. Please. I mean, what, you think people are stupid?
And what about Preet Bharara as we go forward, Alan? Certainly in your conversation this week with Yancey Roy of Newsday, you talked about the implications and the pressure he would put on some of these folks, including Todd Howe, to reveal more information.
Well, that's right. Look, obviously he has, Preet Bharara has said that Cuomo has not been named in all of this. If Cuomo was to be tied to this by one of the guys who's on trial virtually, as opposed to on trial with a result, potential result of years in prison, wives, families, things like that. We don't know who's going to say what by the time the trial comes. I'm assuming that if it stays the way that it is, Cuomo remains untouched in all of this, except that it's his administration, and he came into town saying he was going to clean things up, and he hasn't done that. In fact, I was interested this week that one of his lesser achievements, something called J. Cope or J. Joke, went after who? Anybody in the Cuomo administration? Nah, not this time. This time, they went after the mayor of New York City, who is, after all, one of Andrew Cuomo's worst enemies.
Let's visit New Jersey and the Bridgegate scandal. The ex-ally of Governor Chris Christie, David Wildstein, who admitted orchestrating the mysterious lane closings at the George Washington Bridge in 2013, Allen testified that he was told that Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey and Governor Andrew Cuomo of New York had agreed to falsely explain the closings as part of a traffic study. Governor Andrew Cuomo has come out strongly and denied he had any connection to the scandal, which sought to shut down traffic for the Fort Lee exit in retaliation for a mayor who didn't support New Jersey Governor Chris Christie.
Well, unfortunately for him and for the prosecutors in this case, it was hearsay-ish. In other words, Cuomo didn't say anything to him. He heard about it. Well, that's tough. He was attacked by the lawyers who were defending and for exactly that. Look, Cuomo is not a stupid man. He's strategic. He thinks about what he's doing. in the end, this doesn't help Cuomo because it smears him one more time. And yet, I don't think this is by any means a knockout punch for Cuomo. It just adds to all of the things that he's got to worry about these days. Running for a third term is not going to be easy for him. The Republicans are out with a running commentary on Cuomo's troubles. They did it again today, and it's savage. They know there's an election coming up, and I think that they're doing what they can to loosen it all up.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York Democratic Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney was at the Newburgh waterfront this week announcing legislation to prevent the establishment of any new anchorage sites in the Hudson River Valley, but the U.S. Coast Guard will continue the proposed rulemaking process as planned. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn has more.
The legislation called the Hudson River Protection Act is Congressman Maloney's response to a U.S. Coast Guard proposal currently open for comment. The proposal is for the creation of up to 10 anchorage sites in the Hudson River to park as many as 43 commercial vessels between Yonkers and Kingston. Here's Maloney.
It is my belief that the desire to expand these sites is predicated on the belief that we're going to have large increases of crude moving down the Hudson River. But the compression in global oil prices, we have oil now at lower than $45 a barrel, has obviated the need for a lot of this infrastructure. In plain English, we don't need it.
His newly introduced legislation, which is co-sponsored by Democratic Hudson Valley Congressman Elliot Engel, would prohibit the Secretary of Homeland Security and, by extension, the U.S. Coast Guard from establishing new anchorage sites for vessels carrying hazardous or flammable material within 5 miles of an existing Superfund site, a nuclear power plant, a site on the National Register of Historic Places, or a critical habitat of an endangered species. Maloney says the Superfund requirement alone covers the entire section of the Hudson River that the Coast Guard proposal is looking at for potential sites. Here's U.S. Coast Guard spokeswoman Chief Warrant Officer Allison Conroy.
We have heard of the proposed legislation. However, we are continuing with the comment period for the proposed anchorages on the Hudson River until that comment period closes on December 6th. We view public participation as essential to effective rulemaking, which is what these proposed anchorages are. And we'll carefully consider all comments and feedback that we receive. We encourage dialogue regarding these proposed anchorages and for our community members as well as our elected officials to submit their comments to the official document before the deadline.
In early September, during a House Transportation and Infrastructure Subcommittee hearing with the U.S. Coast Guard, Maloney raised his concern about the proposed anchorage sites and what he says is the need for ample public input.
The fact is that this is a bad idea. This is not something we need. We don't want it, and we want the process to make to take into account the intense local opposition to this from all corners of all communities in the Hudson Valley. So I just want to take the opportunity today to draw your attention to that and ask for your commitment that that when the public hearings occur, that one, they will occur in a early and a timely way, and that they will be local and that they will take into account as many of these local viewpoints as they possibly can.
Rear Admiral Paul Thomas responded to Maloney during the hearing, saying he is very sensitive to local issues.
I've spoken with the district commander, Admiral Steve Poulin, in fact, just yesterday about this topic. He is committed to full and open dialogue with regard to this regulation, and he's totally open to all the alternatives that are out there to help manage this risk. So we can commit to you that there will be plenty of opportunity for comment, not only to the record, but also through public meetings.
Citing a backdrop of environmental concerns facing Newburgh, including PFOS water contamination, City Councilman Torrance Harvey opposes creating new anchorage sites.
This issue would be even worse, and I say that because we don't want anything to contaminate any of our water sources, particularly the Hudson River.
Democratic State Assemblyman Frank Skartatos, also at the Newburgh waterfront, welcomed Maloney's legislation.
I think we all know that this is a dirty idea, turning the Hudson River into a parking lot that probably has Pete Seeger turning on his grave.
Again, Maloney, who represents the 18th district.
We are going to fight to protect this river. We are going to be good stewards of the Hudson River. And whether it's the PCB cleanup or the other efforts we're engaged in, we're going to do what's right for this river. And we can do that working together.
Again, the public comment period on the Coast Guard proposal is open until December 6th.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
About 4,000 Catholics gathered in Lake Placid recently to reinforce their faith and hear how they can bring more individuals into the church. Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley was there and filed this report.
The Inspire Called to Love Vocation Summit of the Diocese of Ogdensburg brought six speakers, including four bishops, from the U.S. and Canada to talk about Catholicism in the age of social media and how that and individual parishioners can increase interest in the church. Speakers included Auxiliary Bishop of Los Angeles, Robert Barron, Archbishop of Gatineau, Quebec, Paul-André Durocher, and Catholic theologian George Weigel. The Diocese of Burlington includes all of Vermont. Bishop Christopher Coyne's breakout sessions focused on spirituality and vocations. He says the goal of Inspire is to spread the faith, reinforce the faithful, and help people understand that they are more than just a parish.
The purpose of something like this and my approach to the talk I gave was to inspire the people that were in the room to feel good about their faith, to think differently about what we do, and to inspire us to live as disciples and good examples of Catholic community, so as to attract others and to have people desire to want to become part of our church.
Reverend William Minch is a retired priest who rode a parish bus from Sackett's Harbor to Lake Placid for the summit. He says Inspire helps Catholics understand the broadness of the church and their values as Catholics.
Certainly, it is a unique opportunity. We've got a message. So we spread the message within our own parish, and we also feel that message is so valuable that it can reach out and maybe touch the lives of others.
Brother Pier Giorgio Pacelli of the Monastery of Our Lady of Mount Carmel is studying to be a Carmelite priest at the Catholic University of America in Washington, D.C. He was wearing the traditional brown habit of his order with a white mantle. He calls Inspire a special occasion as the church looks to its future.
Well, you know, we're moving into a different sort of period of history in the Catholic Church, and we don't necessarily take for granted the same things that we used to in terms of family connections to our faith, and then to really inspire people to come to believe that faith is something that you have to find for yourself and to share that with others and to really be truly self-inspired to live your faith and to live your faith well in this 21st century.
During the lunch break, James and Colleen Akey were outside the Olympic Center talking with other Catholics.
It helps us who believe. It does inspire us. The theme is vocations, getting people to respond to the call to serve in the church in whatever capacity. But it also, because of that, I think can help draw people into the fold. If God is calling them, we can maybe facilitate that.
There's a breakout session for the youth. They've made an effort to kind of meet everybody at their level, and it's just a beautiful and brilliant plan to hold this and to draw people from all over the diocese. And I think it's like your multivitamin, you know? You may be faithful, but it doesn't hurt to get a little boost. It has been inspiring.
St. Joseph's and St. Patrick's Church is in Utica, New York. Roseanne Witowski is the chair of the Vocations Committee at the merged church.
I think all religions are having their problems now. We've got a very secular society. One of the things that Bishop Barron did say in his talk today is 80% of the Catholics don't even go to Mass on Sundays. So we have to have people start going back to church. It all starts with prayer and going to church.
The Inspire Called to Love Summit ended with a celebration of Catholic Mass in the 1980 Olympic Arena.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. You've probably heard the old adage that if something looks too good to be true, it probably is. That's the case in a business deal that led to a bubble that hurt thousands of families, including some in western New York. It was a deal that involved, of all things, alpacas. The Innovation Trail's Rich Kelman reports.
At the Roycroft Arts Festival this summer, Jean McLeod Lang and her husband Brad were showing off their alpacas.
About 20 years ago, we went to the Cattaraugus County Fair and saw my first alpaca.
It was adorable, about 4 feet high.
And I saw that big teddy bear head and those big eyes, and I fell in love and said, someday I'm going to own these.
And sure enough, 9 years later, they did. And they still do on their farm in Elma.
We have almost 70 on the farm, 10 babies expected yet this year.
Hi, baby.
70 with 10 on the way.
With 10 more on the way, correct.
Are you talking to us?
They weren't alone back then. Promoters pushed alpacas as pets maybe, but mainly as investments.
Wake up to the wonderful world of alpacas.
This is a TV commercial from 2007.
I don't have to put on a suit or a uniform. It's a wonderful business.
But there was trouble lurking in the shadows for the alpaca business back then.
I've seen them. I think they're gorgeous, but...
Economist John Slenker of the State Labor Department.
The prices that were being paid for them originally were very high for a pet that you can make sweaters with. How many sweaters do you need?
The business became a bubble.
Everything is broken.
People rushed to buy alpacas. They expected a big demand for the animals themselves and for their fiber for sweaters and such. Some alpacas went for tens of thousands of dollars, a few for hundreds of thousands. But within a few years, alpaca prices dropped by as much as 80%. Many investors sold theirs at a loss. Some gave them away.
What a great way to get rich. Did you think of it that way?
Never. We, in doing our research, realized these are livestock. You know, livestock is not something you're going to get rich quick on.
It was always money going out, nothing coming in.
It wasn't easy. It wasn't quick.
Now we finally found a way to make some money, you know, through selling our product through the store and doing craft show events.
You didn't fall away. You're still here.
We are, because we love the animals. Back, 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 back. That's how I call them.
It's near sundown on Jean and Brad's farm in Elma. The baby alpacas are galloping through the pasture.
They run to get their body temperature up to sustain them through the evening.
A family from Alden are with them, Susan Bishop and her three young daughters.
You're a new owner, right?
We are. Actually, my kids are the owners.
They're boarding their alpaca here at Jean and Brad's farm to learn about them, to take care of them.
So that when we have a farm of our own, we're able to better understand them, know what to do.
It all began for the family long ago when daughter Hannah was a year old and saw an alpaca at the Erie County Fair. And now?
Just like right away when I saw Beacon, the alpaca that I own now, I called it love at first sight because then we could save up to board Beacon here.
Call them the second generation alpaca owners. Cautious, smart, realistic. And for Brad and Jean?
We've grown and learned. And so that's what we want to try and give to other people, like the Bishop family.
And as with any investment,
adorable.
Beware of the bubble.
That was the Innovation Trail's Rich Kelman reporting. And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1641. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.